This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is episode 298, and we've got a good one for you this evening, recording on a Tuesday night. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals website from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and we will have a special guest coming up for the last half of the show, Justin Higdon, who came on for a couple of shows a year ago when we were talking draft and the former co-host with Seth on the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast from back in the day, from yesteryear. And so we've got a lot to talk about. Some of it's Cardinals, some of it's Rams, and then we've got the Senior Bowl. Seth, we're hitting like it's kind of weird. We're in full draft season, but now there's nothing until the draft.
Yeah, and it's just different. I mean, Justin and I will maybe talk slightly about what we were able to get in order to kind of really dig into the Senior Bowl, but that's not going to be possible for anything else the rest of the offseason going into the draft. So this is going to be something where, you know, a guy like Justin, who uses these speed and agility metrics and things like that to kind of eliminate outliers and things like that, is going to be tough, and it's going to create even more mystery, you know, going into the draft than really ever before. I mean, last year team interviews or team workouts were slightly down, but not having a combine, not being able to do, you know, team interviews again, it seems like, at least at this point, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah. And so what we're going to do is it's going to be interesting over the next, because there's no build up to the combine. There will be in the pro days and pro timing days that the NFL is calling them, are coming up over, you know, they're going to peter in week after week, day after day, starting in March. And so we get no big event. There won't be any big event for prospect interviews, coaches and GMs, which was a big event. It was a big part of at least for what I do, I found very valuable to be able to take their comments and what they say and then to create content for us the next little while and speculation. I think the evaluation process isn't going to change a whole lot, especially after what they did last year. They had the combine and then didn't really have pro days. Schools will be able to run their pro days, and they're going to have to have a uniform way to time things so we can get those weights and measurements and 40 times and all of that. It's going to be interesting. But in this show, what we've got for y'all, we're going to kick things off talking about Matthew Stafford, who's not even a Cardinal, but his addition to the LA Rams kind of changes the landscape of the NFC West. We'll talk about that and what it means for the division, maybe what it means for the Cardinals potentially. We'll talk about the Pro Bowl, a very different Pro Bowl scenario, and then we're going to jump into the Senior Bowl. We'll bring on Justin. We'll talk about the players who stood out both in their week of practice and then in the game itself, which was held over the weekend. We'll talk offense, we'll talk defense, and then to close the show, we'll also discuss the players who perhaps maybe disappointed, probably hurt themselves a little bit. So let's go ahead and get started. Now, we had the big news over the weekend, and that was Matthew Stafford got traded to the LA Rams. So he's the first quarterback domino to fall, and it's to the Rams, who give up. They don't have first-round picks ever. The last time they had a first-round pick was when they drafted Jared Goff in 2016. No first round pick in 2017 or 2018 or 2019 or 2020. They didn't even have one this year to trade. So they trade away 2022 and 2023 in addition to a third round pick this year. And they send Jared Goff packing to Detroit as well. What were your first thoughts when you heard of the deal, when you heard the report?
I thought that's a lot for Matt Stafford. Not that he's a bad quarterback, but I mean, we're talking similar for Deshaun Watson, who's 8-9 years younger and, you know, technically more accomplished than Matthew Stafford at this point in their, you know, lives. But you go back, and you and I kind of talked about it last week when we were discussing Matt Stafford to potentially the San Francisco 49ers, which we now can confirm we're going to get back together and talk about Stafford after they got back from the Senior Bowl. And the Rams and apparently the Panthers jumped ahead of them in the pecking order, and then the Rams just basically shot for the moon with their offer. You know, the Stafford deal is very similar outside of the Goff factor to what we saw the Raiders trade the Bengals for Carson Palmer. You've talked a lot about how their careers kind of mimic and mirror one another. Let's hope for Stafford's sake. Well, maybe not because he's in the division now, but, you know, let's hope for Stafford's sake that it's not a 2-year dumpster fire in LA that he then gets traded away for peanuts. But you know, the initial parts of their careers really do mimic each other all the way through the fact that, you know, never really were able to take their moribund franchise to the next point. But I will say this, and you know, in it being good for the Cardinals, breaking it down from a Cardinals perspective, I think the astronomical price they paid basically made it impossible for San Francisco to trade for Deshaun Watson. And you might be wondering, how's that? Well, I mean, you've set the bar at 2 firsts and a 3rd for a 33-year-old one-time Pro Bowl quarterback. What's the price for a 25-year-old, 3-time quarterback who's coming off his best statistical season when he had the three of us basically playing wide receiver for him?
Right. Yeah, it's, you know, kind of the talk of, what was it, John McClain from the Houston Chronicle kind of suggests that they need 2 firsts and 2 seconds and like, top level defensive players. So we're talking, like, for San Francisco to pull the trigger on this, it would involve a couple of firsts, Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, and then, well, and that's the thing. Here's the thing that's interesting too, is that, and this is a perspective I didn't even think about when I heard about the Goff Stafford trade. I'm like, wow, so it took Goff 2 first round picks and a 3rd round pick for Stafford. I didn't even think of it this way. And I was watching a show, and then they posed the question, well, it depends how high the price was to get Stafford, depending on how you view Jared Goff. If you're trading Goff as an asset, then the price is super high. But if you're trading him as a liability, kind of like the Brock Osweiler deal a few years ago, and, well, like kind of we've seen in the NBA landscape, where if you've got a contract you want to get off your books, that you, to sweeten the deal, you've got to, as some might say, put a pick in his pocket. And so you can look at this trade for Stafford a couple of ways. So one would be, then it's Goff was the asset, and then you added 3 picks to it. The other way to look at it was, okay, the price was 2 firsts, and then to take Goff, it took this year's 3rd. And maybe it wouldn't have been 2 firsts, but because Los Angeles had no first round pick this year, they had to pay more down the line. So had perhaps had it been a this year pick, they could have gone with straight two first round picks, like this year's and next year's and Goff, and then be good, or this year's first and the third with Goff in the deal. But because you include Goff, if it's a liability, you're either looking at it as a first and a third, and then it's requiring a first to, if you're requiring a first to take the contract, or it's two firsts, kind of like, because the Carson Palmer deal for Oakland back in the day, it was a first and a second that could become a first. And that was just for Carson Palmer straight up. And so you kind of look at it that way. So was Goff an asset or a liability in the Lions' eyes? Were they taking Goff saying, okay, we get a quarterback in return? Or they need another pick to take on Goff's contract? And then if you look at San Francisco with Deshaun Watson, and that's kind of been the thing, is that the reports getting out there, like, nope, Houston's not interested at all in Jimmy Garoppolo, that if they're going to have to include Jimmy Garoppolo, then they're going to have to sweeten the deal anymore. If they're going to require, if that team is going to have to take on Garoppolo's contract, then you view him as a liability and therefore have to sweeten the pot even more. That is the one thing, because you're looking, well, crap, the Rams got better, and then crap, the 49ers are looking for a quarterback. But, you know, Deshaun Watson, it seems almost impossible for that to happen. And what's interesting is, you know, the name that I saw come up, what was it, yesterday? Kirk Cousins? Kirk Cousins, is he actually any better than Jimmy Garoppolo? We don't even know how good Kirk Cousins is. So they could be kind of standing still. My pick is Matthew Stafford makes the Rams better, in my opinion. I think he's going to have, assuming that it isn't Carson to Oakland, because Oakland was a poorly run franchise. It was a joke. Carson, when he came to Arizona, took a team that was in the dumps and immediately gave them credibility. Now, there was also Bruce Arians and some other talent that came into the building. But I think what Stafford does to the Rams, because some of their, basically, as we saw late in the year, their problems were quarterback-based. It was Jared Goff's failure to elevate them more than what they were. And I believe Stafford is a better, more talented quarterback. And I think he can. We've seen some monster years from Matthew Stafford, and I think he will thrive with that type of offensive system. And I feel pretty confident that he'd gone to another team, say San Francisco, Washington, these teams that had losing records, and they add that quarterback, they're immediately better, like the Cardinals were in 2013, where they won 10 games and just missed the playoffs. And had he gone to a place like Indy or LA, I think that makes them even better, legitimate, because he's still in the prime of his career. He has prime arm talent. He's a good decision maker. He's smart. He's well-liked. He would come into the building with instant respect in the locker room, just like Carson Palmer did. And I think he will have a great impact. Honestly, I think the Rams are immediately, depending, like, we look at what the Seahawks do this offseason, and I think immediately the Rams become the favorites in the division, honestly.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it, they were, what, a game back of the Seahawks anyways? Or, yeah, one game back, and, you know, they then just beat down the Seahawks in the playoffs. You know, and I think the biggest thing for them is going to be the health of these veterans that they're really leaning on. I mean, you talked about Stafford's health, but I mean, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, and then, you know, what's going to happen with Cooper Kupp. I mean, we saw how bad that offense was without Cooper Kupp out there in the divisional round against Green Bay. And then, you know, an Andrew Whitworth, you know, if he does come back at left tackle. So those are all, I mean, it's the right move in terms of improving the position. The bugaboo or the thing that could bite them is the fact that, you know, now you're looking at a 33-year-old quarterback, a 39-year-old left tackle. Aaron Donald is going to be, I think, 30 or 29 this year, but he's got a lot of miles on the tires. Let's be honest about that. He's still the best defense player in football, so that doesn't matter. But, and so you're just, I mean, you're betting on health, and you know, as Cardinals fans, we know how much that can bite you in the butt when you're betting on health of a lot of veterans.
It's true. Carson Palmer did, you know, there were injury concerns about Carson when he came to Arizona. He'd had the ACL. He had had the shoulder been an issue. The one thing with Stafford that you kind of question is the fact, well, he missed half the season in 2019 with the back injury, which you always are a little bit leery about. But if you look at the totality of his career, he missed games his first two seasons. From 2011 to 2018, he did not miss a game, and he didn't miss a game last year. So he has been very durable throughout his career. But in terms of what you're going to get out of Matthew Stafford that you didn't get with Jared Goff is that, you know, Jared Goff has incredible arm talent. And we saw the magic that, you know, that Sean McVay got out of him in those 2 years, in those first 2 years, being the coach of the Rams with 2017-2018. And then, you know, things kind of fell apart. Now, part of that was that the Rams were just plain good. But if you look at a guy like Matthew Stafford, who hasn't had the type of thing. So if you look at Pro Football Reference, you look at the clutch type things, like fourth quarter comebacks and game-winning drives. Jared Goff, in his five seasons in NFL, have six fourth quarter comebacks and eight game winning drives, and half of those, like four of those on each end, happened in 2018. Matthew Stafford has had just last year, just alone last year, on a 5-11 team, three fourth quarter comebacks and four game winning drives. And if you go back to 2016, he had 8-8. He was the best. He's one of the with the type of team that he's been on, he's been as clutch as any quarterback in the NFL. You give him the ball with a chance to win late in the game, he's good at it. And that's a different level, that the type of confidence that you get with him, which I think will be the difference for the Rams this year if he stays healthy and if the rest of their main talent stays healthy. Cardinals fans, you should know, we've seen uber-talented teams go up in flames because of key injuries. Everything goes well, this Rams team is something to deal with.
And that's the big thing that you're going to have to look at now is, you know, health-wise, that's going to, I mean, obviously we don't know what Stafford will look like in McVay's system, but we're guessing, assuming that they're going to be as good, at least in year one, if not slightly better.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk of the weather. Let's talk about what was a Pro Bowl, a virtual Pro, a Madden Pro Bowl, and Kyler Murray being the star. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We move on to talk about the Pro Bowl. There was no game, but there was. There was a video game. So welcome to the world of my children and people a little bit younger than I am. Okay, I grew up playing video games. I mean, old school video games and football on the PS2 and on the Nintendo. But this year's Pro Bowl was in fact a video game where you had Deshaun Watson for the AFC and Kyler Murray for the NFC leading a team of four people. You know, one quarterback. You got Watson and Murray. You've got another Pro Bowl. You have a NFL legend, you want to say a former NFL player in the NFC, Marshawn Lynch. And then you had Keyshawn Johnson for the AFC. You had the ringer from somewhere else. You brought Snoop Dogg on for AFC. Bubba Wallace for the NFC. And yeah, that's kind of what you were doing for the team. And I thought it was, now I have been long and like, people complain about the Pro Bowl every year, literally every year. Why do we play the Pro Bowl? It's stupid. You get rid of it. I like the Pro Bowl because it's fun, and I don't try to make it think more than it is. I think it's enjoyable. You get to see the players playing with other great players, but this was kind of entertaining.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at it, it's what everybody complains about, right, with the Pro Bowl, is that there's not enough action. And, you know, guys aren't playing hard because they don't want to risk their health. And then you find a semi-alternative. Let's be honest, it's not a, you know, a great alternative, but you find an alternative and then you complain about that. So, I mean, that's just, let's be honest, that's kind of the nature of fandom at this point, especially with all of the online-ness of everything. So you're going to have, I mean, my kids loved it. They thought it was the coolest thing in the world. I mean, they got to watch.
The trash talking was so great.
Well, and they got to watch Kyler Murray do something that they do.
Right.
And so it's a bit more of a connection to the younger kids who are, you know, huge. I mean, my kids are huge Kyler Murray fans as is, but for them to look at it and go, holy cow, you know, he's doing something that I do 3 to 4 times a week, it just takes it to a different level, and it makes it seem like they, you know, because let's face it, my kids know they'll never be Kyler Murray, but they can do something like Kyler Murray in that way.
Right. And you know, it was kind of cool to see him, you know, get on. And then what is the first thing that he does when he gets on? He changes the quarterback to him. So he was playing as himself on the game. But yeah, it was super enjoyable. It was here's the thing. It was only, would it last a little more than an hour? Because it was just a video game. So it wasn't this 3.5 hour deal. But, you know, it didn't involve as many other players. It didn't involve a trip. I wouldn't mind that being part of it moving forward. I think for the sake of life, I'd love to see the real Pro Bowl come back. I do like it. It's, you know, of the All-Star games, it's the one part that makes it different is the fact that it's after the season is over. And so there's some distance from it because, you know, three quarters of the teams have been done since December. And so, and then you have the injury opt-outs and players skipping. And so you end up with, you know, all end of talented players, but they're not always like elite players. I still think it's fun. I don't mind it. But I didn't mind this either. It was better than the alternative of not doing anything at all. And hey, I'm sure the NFL made a lot of money on it. So
that's exactly. Good.
And if the NFL makes money, that means the players make money. And that means the Cardinals can sign more players. But so can the other
exactly.
So we should want the league to get lots of money because we want the Cardinals to be good. So that's enough with that. Coming up next on the Rise Up here at Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's bring on Justin and let's talk about the Senior Bowl. That's coming up next on Rise Up Red. We're back on the Rise Up Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, and it's now time to bring on our guest Justin Higdon. Justin and Seth go back quite a ways. Justin, what have you been up to this past little while?
Hey guys, how are you doing? I've been actually watching the Senior Bowl from a distance. You know, can you guys hear me okay?
We can, yes.
Great. So I think Seth alluded to it earlier where we actually got a hold of the media All 22 practice footage. So I combed through some of that during the week. That was kind of fun to go through. Some of it's kind of dry, kind of tough to watch, but I was able to get through a couple practices for each team, and then was able to watch the game on Saturday evening after I took the kids sledding. We have about a foot and a half of snow here in the Chicagoland area. But other than that, you know, I've been doing what a lot of other people have been doing for about a year, and that's sitting at home waiting for things to open up, waiting for maybe taking a road trip here and there when it's permissible. But just kind of like you guys were saying earlier, it's a weird year. We're not going to have a real combine. So just kind of trying to soak up as much college football and draft stuff as I can right now.
Sounds good. Well, we welcome you back, Justin. We're glad to have you on, especially it gets you and Seth back together a little bit, the band back together. And when it comes to draft content, I will say, I will make it very clear, I don't try to grind tape because that's not my deal. I like to listen to what people say who do grind tape and have inside information, who have insight to teams. I like reading that stuff based more than anything else. Like to get the information from people that I know and trust, and then go from there. So this is where I end up speaking a little less, which we listeners might or might not like. You might enjoy a little bit less, Jess. So let's go ahead and get started. What we want to talk about, let's talk, kind of break it down into three segments. Let's talk about first the offensive side of the ball. Who were the ones that helped themselves and stood out in the practices and in the game? For those people who watch, there are some names that have been floating around, guys who write about and cover the draft. Some of the common names keep coming up, but based on what you two have heard and seen on the offensive side of the ball, who really helped themselves off among the offensive players?
Well, I think the best player that I saw in practice all week, and then he had a couple big plays. He had a touchdown and a 2-point conversion in the game, and that was Amari Rodgers, the receiver from Clemson. I thought he just really stood out. He looked like he was playing at a different speed than the defensive backs he was playing against. And he was making all the catches. He weighed in over 200 pounds. He's like a running back size. I think he came in a little short, like 5'10", but 210 pounds. And he's just a really explosive, quick, and fast receiver. He was the guy I would pick for the player of the week. Like, I know that other I know, on the coverage we saw, they were enamored with some other guys, but Amari Rodgers was one that stood out to me the most.
In terms of players that you look at, is he kind of a Reggie Cobb-type impact player? I mean, I know when you look at teams like the Cardinals, they take the Senior Bowl stuff especially seriously, especially when you get, and maybe it's not so much from a Clemson program, but when you get teams, when you get players from teams that are in lesser programs, they really take the Senior Bowl performance highly as part of their grades.
Yeah, I think he really stood out and helped himself because I think he was he was being kind of pigeonholed as a slot receiver in the coverage that I was watching on NFL Network, but he's so fast, and I think he was doing such a good job of getting good position to get the ball and catching outside of his body with his hands that I think there's a possibility he could line up outside, be, you know, a number two receiver. With the way Clemson used him, they did a lot of run after the catch stuff with him, so I think that's probably what most teams are going to envision. But he might be surprising once he gets on the field with some of these teams, and they might be able to do a little bit more with him. I think he's not as tall, but I think in a lot of ways his progression throughout his career and then his great Senior Bowl week is reminiscent of Terry McLaurin a couple of years ago, because he really didn't emerge on this big time program until his senior year. And Rodgers was a little bit more productive as a senior than McLaurin was, you know, stats wise. But, and I don't really think they're that similar type of player, but they are guys that can, that are, you know, they're strong, they're aggressive, they can run through tackles, they can both play special teams. So I think in those respects, and the fact they both just shined as seniors during a Senior Bowl week, I think you could see that kind of rise in draft stock from Amari Rodgers.
Seth, you were about to say something before I jumped in. Go for it.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, Justin and I had actually talked about Amari a little bit with some of our other friends that we text about. And I told them, when you watch him play, he reminds me a lot of Tyler Lockett. You know, just that really smooth, and he looks like he's, like Justin said, he's playing at a different speed than everybody else. But it's not that he's overly fast. I think he was, what did we say, like a 4-5 guy coming out of, or he was a 4-6 guy coming out of high school, right, Justin?
I think he's actually he was actually a high 4-4 guy coming out.
Okay. Yeah, so
he's actually maybe even faster than that at this point.
And so you watch him though, he runs his routes extremely crisp. He's always, you know, he's always forcing the DB into turning around, and that's why it reminded me a lot of Lockett. When, you know, I love Tyler Lockett coming out of Kansas State. You know, Justin hit on the head. He's a little bulkier than most of these guys coming out at 210 pounds at only, you know, they say 5'10". but he looked really good this week and kind of showed that the top three wide receivers are seemingly slam dunk type of guys. But I don't know if you need to go with another wide receiver in the first round, because you could get a guy like Amari Rodgers in round two and get, you know, really solid production out of him.
Other players that kind of stood out. The name that kept coming up, and this was both from a guy who writes, one of my contributors on my site, to Touchdown Wire, Michael Schofield, and then the broadcast, everyone just gushed about this kid, Quinn Meinerz, who, you know, was playing center. Wasn't it for the first time he really hadn't played center at all?
Right. He actually they kind of gave background on it. He taught himself how to play center during the off season because he's from Wisconsin Whitewater. It's a Division III school. They didn't have a season. They didn't have an off season. So this kid was working out in the woods. He was working out on his on his parents' property, and then he had he taught himself how to snap the ball. Just to throw a little water on this, though, he did have some trouble snapping the ball. There were some problems with the center exchanges throughout the week, but you also saw that with Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma as well. So that's maybe more of a lack of familiarity with the coaching staff, with the quarterbacks, than it is on the center. But Meinerz was really a fan favorite because he was wearing like a cutoff shirt, like Ezekiel Elliott style. He had his hairs in dreadlocks. He's wearing a headband. He just seemed like a guy that was fun to party with.
And then he was mauling guys.
Yeah. And he's mauling guys. I mean, the one rep that you probably have seen, if you watched it on TV, or if you saw some clips on Twitter, is he's going up against Patrick Jones, who's a defensive end, second team All-American from Pitt, and Meinerz just ties him up and pancakes him, just flattens him in a pass protection. He did a lot of impressive things. I think to me, he looked better in the team drills and in the game itself than what I saw in the one-on-ones, because he was new to snapping the ball and then getting right into position. But yeah, I think I mean, you're talking about a Division III guy that goes in to the Senior Boys going against these guys from Power Five conferences, and he's holding his own. You wouldn't know that he's a D3 guy if they didn't tell you.
And the nice thing is for us, is one of our actual good friends in real life coached him. And so we can get some insight into him, more of him, you know, as that comes along, if that's something we ever need to do. There's actually video of him dunking a basketball on Twitter. Like, so not only is he, you know, did he have a really good Senior Bowl, but I mean, he's, for a guy that's, what is he? They list him at what, 6'4" and 305 or something like that pounds. He's able to dunk a basketball. I mean, he looks like he's got a chance to be, you know, a day two pick, which is, I mean, that's, I think you're going to get a lot of comparisons to Ali Marpet coming out of, was that,
Of Hobart.
Hobart. I was going to say Hofstra, but I knew that wasn't right. Yeah. Coming out of Hobart. And they are similar in size and kind of the way they play, in terms of that kind of, you know, we've talked about a lot on here, Jess, about how the Cardinals, outside of J.R. Sweezy, lack that guy that's kind of nasty. Quinn would definitely be that guy if the Cardinals wanted to go that route on day two of the draft. But he was a lot of fun to watch, just because, I mean, one, he worked his butt off. You know, I don't want anybody to take this the wrong way, but two, he was out there having fun, which is just, I mean, that's just not something you see very often.
The name that came up at running back, both during the game and people who watched him in practice, Michael Carter. What was there to like about him, and what are the other running backs who kind of stood out? I mean, there's obviously, you've got the top running backs at the top, you know, at the top of the draft, but not everyone's going to draft a Travis Etienne. No, not everyone's going to get Najee Harris. What should we know about these other running backs?
So I'll qualify this by saying that, and I've said this every year going back to the old show, the Senior Bowl and the other All-Star games is not always the best showcase for running backs. It's a tougher showcase for them because they are not tackling there, so you don't get to see these guys that are running through tackles and things like that. They're in tough one-on-one pass protection scenarios that they're not necessarily used to. So it's not the great showcase. But Carter, I think why he stood out to me was he picked up where he left off at UNC with his vision and his quickness, with his quick feet and his ability to just accelerate out of his cuts. And that made him, to me, the best running back easily at the Senior Bowl this week. He was not the best in pass protection, but this is not a guy that you're going to have pass protecting on third down. He's a guy who's going to run a route on third down. He's a guy who's going to, you want to catch the ball. Carter had it. He was the only running back really that had a great game too. I think he had 60 yards. He had a 28 yard run at one point. You saw the athleticism on display. This is a guy who led the Power Five, I think the whole FBS, with 8 yards a carry this year. And he was in a tandem with another a really good running back at UNC, Javonte Williams, who was a junior. So he wasn't at this game this past week. But Carter, easily the best running back there for my money. And really, there was only one other running back to me that even stood out in a really positive way, and that was Larry Rountree from Missouri. And he's a player who, he just struck me as a really well-rounded running back. Like, he did everything well enough. There was no one part of that game that he struggled at, and I thought most of the other running backs kind of did. So with Rountree, he's probably a late round, very late or undrafted free agent pickup because he's not flashy in any way. He's maybe going to wind up being a third running back somewhere. But I thought he had a good week because he maybe was a forgotten man among some of the other names that were there. And he stood out as a nice, well-rounded guy. A guy could block, catch, and run the ball pretty well.
What about the receivers? So you mentioned Amari Rodgers. Who are the other receivers to know that helped them? The name that I heard a lot was Dwayne Eskridge, and that was mainly just because of his top-end speed. Is there anyone else that we should know about? Obviously, the Cardinals have used a lot of draft picks on receivers recently and haven't gotten a whole lot of production out of them. That's a position of interest.
Yeah, Eskridge really stands out because of his speed, but when you're looking at the one-on-one reps, that it's almost unfair. The cornerbacks are back there like all by themselves. They have no help that they normally would have, and so Eskridge is just running right by everybody a lot of times. To me, that's the speed, certainly impressive, but nothing too impressive about the practice performance. Same thing was kind of going on with Kadarius Toney. They were gushing about him on the broadcasts, but Toney, and I don't think Toney played in the game. He maybe ducked out after a couple practices. He was great at getting open. He was great at running by people. He had a lot of drops, though, that I saw. I think especially two really noteworthy ones on day two that I can think of. So those were two. They stood out in a good way because they clearly have NFL athleticism and speed, but I wasn't like super, super enamored with those guys. One guy that I really like is Nico Collins, and he's from Michigan. He opted out this year, but he's the only big receiver that was there, and he's 6'4", 215. Yeah, he says he runs 4.45. That might be a little bit generous. Maybe he's more like a 4.55 guy, which would put him in the same area as as a couple other big receivers I've liked the last couple of years, like T. Higgins and Preston Williams. Well, both those guys are good because of their size and their ability to position themselves and the body control that they have. And Nico Collins was showing some of those same things in practice. I really like him. I really like the size. I think he's going to go higher than a lot of people are looking for. Remember, T. Higgins was getting beat up about his pro day, and he was the first pick of the second round last year. So Collins is a player I think is going to have high draft position. He's a little bit of a forgotten man because he didn't play this year, but he did what he had to do, I thought, in those practices.
Demetric Felton was an interesting guy. I don't know exactly where he fits in the NFL, but you know, he talked a little bit about Kadarius Toney. It's interesting because I feel like Felton is one of those guys that can do similar things in old draft guy Eric Stoner talked about, you know, 80% rule, and if you can get a guy in the fifth round doing 80% of somebody in the first round, like, isn't that better value? And I feel like Felton out of UCLA is that guy. But you know, it's hard to figure out Chip Kelly prospects a lot of times and where they fit in the NFL and how they fit in the NFL. And that's one of the things I have with Felton. He looked good. He had a good, week. He's got, you know, athleticism. I'm not sure exactly where in the NFL he fits in.
I think Felton gets the Mike Mayock quicker than fast award. Like, I don't know that he's going to really be a burner, but he looked faster because he's so much quicker out of his breaks. And again, in those one-on-one situations, a player like that can really shine. And he also had a touchdown in the game where he was one-on-one against cornerback DJ Daniel in space. And he had one man to beat for a short touchdown, and he got it. And I think we should also mention just quickly Tylan Wallace from Oklahoma State. He came off a torn ACL last year, played this year, had a good year. He looked really smooth. He's a professional receiver, and I think maybe some people are worried that he's a four-year player. He didn't break out early enough, I guess, or he came back. He's coming off the injury. He doesn't have great size, but he's a very good professional receiver, and I think he'll be a good player sometime in the day two range.
Tight ends and offensive linemen. Now, of the players that of the list that you gave us kind of pre-show, you've got Kenny Yeboah, Trey McKitty, Hunter Long, John Bates. Who do you like in that group?
I really liked Yeboah as a receiving tight end. He's clearly an athletic guy, and he put up big numbers. They kept talking about it on, I think on ESPN, that he had 180 yards receiving against Alabama. He's a transfer. He was a grad transfer from Temple. But he fit right into that offense, and he was making plays. He's another player. He scored a touchdown in the game, too. It was a little bit of a gift, but that's okay because it's an all-star game. Hunter Long, I think, is probably the best overall prospect out of this bunch. And because he's all around, he's an all around tight end. He can block. He looks the part. He's big. He's really big. He had a year of eligibility left, but he left early. He does a great job just getting open on those, you know, short outbreaking and inbreaking routes that you see out of professional tight ends. And I think you'll see the field early because of his blocking ability. The other two guys, Bates and McKitty, I put them on because I didn't know anything about these guys. McKitty had 6 catches this year in 7 games for Georgia. He was a grad transfer from Florida State. And then Bates had 12 catches in 5 games for Boise State. I don't even think I saw a Boise State game in the regular season. So I just put those guys on there because they kind of came out of nowhere and acquitted themselves well. And McKitty made a couple really big circus catches during the practices.
and among the offensive linemen, you've already talked about Miners. You talked a little bit about Creed Humphrey. Who else is of note among the linemen there? I know the one name I recognize two names on this list. One, Alex Leatherwood. He's a guy that's come up in mock drafts even from a year ago, and Dylan Raddins.
Yeah, I joked with Justin in our group text about that Dylan Raddins is going to end up being the best North Dakota State player that comes out this
year.
So, you know, Raddins looked good. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes. He had a good week for a guy that, I mean, let's be honest, really didn't play much this year. They played one game, right, Justin? I mean...
Yeah, they played one game against Central Arkansas.
Yeah, and so he more than anything for a guy like Raddins and Miners, it's going to be, you know, what they look like and are testing like. Because if they still look like they're in shape and they're still, you know, testing at a high level, then, you know, it shows that they put in the work during their basically year off from college football. And that's going to just... endear themselves to NFL teams, especially coming from small schools. Not that North Dakota State's really a small school anymore, but he's, you know, to come out and have the week he had where he was one of the guys that stood out, I thought was strong for him.
The reason I put Leatherwood on here was because they keep talking about him playing guard in the NFL. And I don't really agree with that. And I'm a guy who likes to try and project tackles to guard, but I think that Leatherwood is good enough at tackle to stay there. Maybe not on the left side, but I thought he had a rocky practice the first day. But I thought he recovered pretty nicely after that and really recovered. And I think he was working hard to show that he asked to take all his reps at left tackle. So he was going to go out there and he was going to stick it out. And I thought he did a good job, and I thought he did well enough. I could have really put the entire, I think, national team's offensive line on here, because especially day two, they just completely shut everybody down in one-on-ones. They just looked so impressive. And that was including Miners, including Dylan Raddins and James Hudson and Jalen Moore. Hudson is an offensive tackle from Cincinnati. Moore was from, I want to say, Western Michigan. I'm not looking at my notes right now, but those two guys. And the thing was, they were both playing some tackle, playing some guard. They were really trying to move these guys around to see if they could be versatile enough to play tackle, play guard. And I thought those guys did well no matter where they lined up, especially in the one-on-ones. And the other guy was Dante Smith. He was from the other team, I think, but he's from East Carolina. A similar vein to Moore and Hudson. He looked good at left, at guard and tackle no matter who he was going against.
Is that the Moore from Grambling State?
No, that was David Moore. Okay. And that was one I thought he was a little hefty for me, because yeah. I think that's kind of limiting. A guy like that's kind of limited where what he can do. And I think we'll talk more about another guy that I thought was like that too.
Yeah, it was interesting with Moore because he's 6'1" and 350 pounds.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's got a lot of weight to carry.
He's got super long arms though, so that's, I mean, it's interesting though.
Yeah.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on love. It's to come back and talk about the defensive side of the ball. Which players stood out in practice in the game? We'll kind of look at that again after this break. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk defense. I see a name on here that, you know, gives me fear because of the name. Jonathan Cooper. This is not the bust of a draft pick of the Arizona Cardinals. This is a defensive player. What is there to know about this Jonathan Cooper?
Well, Jonathan Cooper went to Ohio State, and he was there for, I think, 6 years. So he was a player who definitely, at least 5 years. He was a senior last year, and they redshirted him. He wanted to redshirt. So he only played four games in 2019. He came back and played in 2020 and had his best season. He doesn't have a lot of great stats. Like, he doesn't have a lot of sacks. I think people that watched him in the playoffs saw him play really, really well against Clemson. But you're not, if you look up his stats on Sports Reference, you're not going to find much to really hang your hat on. But what I like about Cooper is he's coached up by Larry Johnson from Ohio State, and you could tell in the one-on-ones he was the guy who had the best hands and the best array of moves. And I think he's a good enough athlete too that he's going to be in somebody's rotation as a defensive end. He can rush the passer, he can play the run. If you watch the game on Saturday, he had 1.5 sacks, so he is capable of getting to the quarterback. It's just in these schemes these days, if you're not lightning quick, you don't get a ton of sacks. So, but I like Cooper a lot. I think I don't think he's a first round guy. He's probably going to be more like a fourth round or later prospect. But you're going to get a good player that's going to make the team and be part of the rotation.
Who else among the defensive linemen and on the front seven? Let's talk front seven. Who else was there to know about from the Senior Bowl from the front seven?
I thought Osa Odigizuwa, you know how this game goes. I thought he played well. You know, those kind of versatile interior pass rushers always intrigue guys because they tend to, like Justin's talking about with wide receiver drills and how much it's all about, or you know, it favors the wide receivers. Those one-on-one pass rushing drills are similar with those those smaller interior defensive linemen, and Osa really did have a nice week for that. I think the only guy that really gave him problems was Miners out of that we talked about earlier. I think he gives a team, you know, a similar type of rotational interior pass rusher that we've seen lately. And, you know, I've heard now people talking about him on day two. I don't know if I'd go that high yet, but I think he's got some, you know, he's got some juice, which gives him value on the interior.
The guy who popped to me was Levi Onwuzurike from Washington. And it's another player who opted out this year. So I'm going to call him Levi so I don't butcher his last name again. But he only practiced the first day, but he really jumped out to me as the best defensive lineman there. And really after he left the practice field, none of the other players on that team, I think that was the national team, really stood out to me. Odigizuwa had some good plays in the game, and he had a few good reps, but if those drills were intended to favor the defensive linemen, I think that speaks even more to how well I thought the offensive linemen for that team, for that national team, played in the practices. Some other guys that stood out to me, they were all tweeners on the D-line. It was Chauncey Golston from Iowa, Cam Sample from Tulane, who I think was the practice player of the week for the D-line for his team. And then Carlos Basham from Wake Forest. I put him on here because he was making plays when they lined him up inside, but I would have liked to see him. I think he came in at 280, and he has a massive wingspan. So if he's going to play inside, you know they're going to want him to add weight. So I put him on here. I would have liked to see a guy that weighs 280 be more successful outside. But if they're going to move him inside, bulk him up, then I think he'd do very well if he maintains his quickness. I'll run through a few linebackers real quick. I thought two Ohio State linebackers did well in the practice. And that was Justin Hilliard. I thought his stock has really gone from nothing to a draftable player, like a late-round player. He's had injury problems his whole college career. but he played really well in the playoffs, and he was doing, I thought he was doing well in the drills that I saw. Didn't really see him stand out in the game at all. Baron Browning, he was a little hot and cold, actually. But what you see out of him is that his highs are really high. He's fast, so he can make a big play with a blitz. He can make a big play for a tackle for a loss, like he did in the game the other day. He'll get you a sack occasionally. He might get you an interception or at least get his hand on the ball in coverage. So Browning's a player probably more on his athleticism than what he actually put on tape is probably going to be like a maybe third round pick, maybe a little, some people say even second round. I think more like a third round pick. And then Jabril Cox was the transfer from North Dakota State to LSU. He looked good in coverage. And I thought KJ Britt from Auburn had a really solid week of practice in one-on-ones, in the pass rush, and in the run-stopping drills during the team drills.
I thought Janarius Robinson out of Florida State was also interesting. He's interesting because he plays right now kind of like a pass rusher only. Like, he's really good if he's going upfield. He's enormous. I guess that's the best way to put it size-wise. And he measured in at 6'5", 266 with an 87-inch wingspan. His arms are almost 36 inches long each, which is just incredible. You know, it's going to be interesting where he goes in the draft, because I felt like when you watch him play, he's a day three guy, but his measurables alone as a pass rusher, you could see him go on day two just because he's got kind of that Danielle Hunter vibe to him, right? Where he's a guy that just didn't get a lot of looks and played for, you know, Hunter wasn't on the best LSU teams at the time. And Florida State's been awful while Robinson was there. It's just going to be interesting to kind of see where he ends up, because he's a guy who kind of I had written down as a day three guy to watch when they added him late to the Senior Bowl roster. And then, I mean, you could tell he was a different kind of built dude, but he's built, you know, a lot like Chandler Jones in terms of just length. And you wonder if he would be a guy that you could, you know, that could learn from Chandler in the NFL.
As we move on to the defensive backs, there aren't a ton of names on here. Give us what you think about the defensive backs and what they can offer.
It's just tough again when they're out on that island. So in those one-on-ones, it's very tough. But the cornerbacks, I will give credit to the guys who at least were scrappy and held their own. They lost some of their battles, but they fought and they won some too. I thought that DJ Daniel from Georgia, Cam Bynum from Cal, he had some plays where it looked like he got torched, but he had some other plays where he made breaks on the ball and broke up some passes. And then Trey Brown, a corner from Oklahoma, kind of same idea as Bynum, where he got beat a couple times, but he was hanging tough on other plays. Overall, wasn't too enamored with the corners. I think Keith Taylor from Washington had the best standout game of the corners, where he made a couple plays on the ball, and he's 6'2" and change, so that's going to make him a popular guy. But those would be for the pure corners, those were the guys that I think deserve a second look for me. There are a couple big safeties, or I guess one could be possibly corner, and one they even said could possibly be a Will linebacker, and that was Benjamin St. Juste from Minnesota. I really liked how big and physical he was. I think he would be better as a safety, but he was breaking up passes, especially with some of the bigger receivers and tight ends. You saw him, his name got called a couple times in the game, and And Hamza Nasiruddin from Florida State, he looked really good covering tight ends. So I'm not so much with the receivers, so I can see where some of that linebacker talk comes with him.
Yeah, and St. Juice was a guy that caught my eye. Just, again, he had a nice week in practice, but 6'3", 201 pounds. And then the other kid who we know from just the family that they're athletic freaks, I'm going to butcher his name, Ifeatu Melifonwu. Remember Obi Melifonwu from a couple years ago? Melifonwu, the cornerback from Syracuse, measured in at 6'3", 214. I assume he's going to play as athletic as his brother was. Let's just hope that he's a better football player.
You know, speaking of St. Juice, too, it was like during the game, Daniel Jeremiah said he reminded him of Kevin King. And I was like, oh, that sounds like the kiss of death after
everything got beat by Scotty Miller.
And it sounds like that, but you got to remember King. I mean, why do we like guys like that as a prospect? And St. Juice is going to have, he's going to be test out really athletic too with King, or like King did. St. Juice has that kind of athleticism. Is he going to struggle so much? You know, but Kevin King did have 5 interceptions a year ago, and he's a player that they, at least for whatever reason, they stick with him. They keep trying to put him out there. I don't think Daniel Jeremiah, and he even kind of clarified this in the broadcast, I don't think he meant that as a slight to St. Juice. I think he just means that's the kind of prospect that you have. Can you be successful with him? You might be more successful if he can add a little weight and move to safety. I think that's what everybody would prefer, because I think you will have some trouble putting him on an island if he's got to guard some of these little quick guys.
And then I think there was a couple safeties that had good weeks. Everybody loved Richie Grant out of Central Florida. You know, it's just, it's tough again in this environment, because you're asking them to do more kind of one-on-one stuff. You know, I think Grant is an interesting guy. I don't think the Cardinals are going to be in on any safeties. At least I'm hoping they're not. I don't know. But, you know, he's a good ball player. And like Justin said, I think a couple of these guys that played well could end up being really solid safeties in St. Just and Melifonwu. I just don't know if the Cardinals are going to be looking for a safety with all their other pressing needs.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Ricardo's talk on the web. We'll finish this up talking about, there are some names of players who actually didn't stand out, and there's some familiar ones. Who were the players who perhaps hurt themselves or their stock might have dropped a little bit from the Senior Bowl? That's going to be next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Bizarre of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's wrap this up and talk about some of the players who perhaps had some expectations and didn't necessarily meet them. The list of Justin you gave us has some names I'm familiar with. You know, there's Tuff Borland, linebacker, Ohio State. A guy that we saw in the championship game, unfortunately, they asked him to cover a Heisman-winning receiver. That didn't go well for him. Marvin Lewis, interior defensive lineman, who, you know, as of like even after the 2020 draft, an early, like way too early mock drafts, was mocked as a potential guy for the Cardinals. Who are the guys that kind of let us down?
Yeah, in some ways, it's just a matter of not so much that they were bad, but they maybe didn't distinguish themselves like you would like to see. And with Borland, unfortunately, and he's a guy, he's well aware of it. He just was not athletic enough to stay with some of the players they're asking him to stay with in some of these, especially in the one-on-one drills. And you can see it. I mean, it's not that the guy can't play at all. It's just that his role is going to be a special teams player, or you know, maybe a sub linebacker, a backup linebacker.
He's a very, like, the type of player he is. We see linebackers like this every year. They're an antiquated type of they're an antiquated player in the NFL now, because the two down linebackers aren't really a thing anymore.
Right, and he's small too. He's a small two down linebacker. It lacks athleticism, so there's just not. I've said to other people, and I try and be pretty brutally honest, especially about Ohio State players, because I went there, and I don't want people to think I'm juicing guys up that I see every week. But Borland is a player I think would have been at a Shrine game or NFLPA game if those had taken place this year. Or perhaps it's just not the deep crop of linebackers that we're used to. But I didn't think he's a guy who normally would have been at the Senior Bowl. With Marvin Wilson, it was more of a thing where he just didn't stand out. He didn't distinguish himself. And you would have liked to see him do that, especially in those one-on-one drills that are supposed to favor defensive linemen. He just didn't distinguish himself to me. And unfortunately, I think along the same lines were the two Pitt defensive ends, Rashad Weaver and Patrick Jones. And I really had high hopes, I think, for Patrick Jones, because I liked what he did at Pitt. I mentioned earlier, he's a second-team All-American. You didn't really see him show up until the game Saturday. So better late than never, but I felt like he could have done so much more with his time this week, and I was a little disappointed. Those were the defensive guys that kind of let me down.
The guy that the I saw this guy on Twitter as Deontay Brown, offensive lineman. He looks like the offensive lineman you'd like to have on your team. What went wrong for him this week? The guy's huge.
I think a lot of it was he's one of those guys that these individual drills just don't do anything good for. The question becomes, is he the kid out of Pitt the Cardinals drafted a couple of years ago?
Man.
What was his name? Something Johnson, right?
Something like that. I can't even remember because he didn't make it ever. I was so disappointed.
You know, or is he Orlando Brown Jr.? That's the question, you know. And so that's what it's really all about with Deontay Brown, is you've got 3 years of film at Alabama where he has not allowed a sack, but he really struggled in individuals and then in the game. I don't know, you know, what to make of it, and that's just being honest, because the guy that you saw as like a day two type of prospect looks like he was, you know, just based on this week, looked undraftable. He only had what, 2 weeks off before he came into this. You know, he's got 3 great years of game film. It's just that. That's one of those now where you're like, he's a day three flyer. You're more comfortable if you see him being taken as a day three flyer as opposed to, you know, a day two guy that you're hoping or expecting to contribute.
Yeah, I think he's just kind of like what we were talking about with the kid from Grambling earlier. He's almost too big, and you're just not going to get some of the scheme fits for him that you'd get with a lot of these other more athletic guard/tackle types. The guys that were able to move about from guard to tackle all week, if they end up at guard, you're going to feel more comfortable with them, you know, pulling and getting out in the zone. And with Brown, it's just if you're not running a smash mouth, just power, he's not going to get to a spot in time against NFL defenders. And I think he's massive, so I think there's some people are going to have some trouble running around him. But he's not my type of offensive lineman. And, you know, he played very well throughout the playoffs, throughout the year for Alabama. He made their line was a machine. But I don't know that it's definitely not a fit for every team. So it's not the type of player. If I'm scouting, it's not the type of player that really appeals to me. It's kind of like I'll leave him to someone else and hope that he works out, lands in a scheme where he's going to excel. But I just didn't see it with him.
The other two players that you have on this list, Sage Surratt, wide receiver, Wake Forest, and Ramondre Stevenson at Oklahoma. What didn't we see out of them this over the last week?
Well, with these two guys, it's not that I thought they were terrible, but it's that relative to the hype that they generated from their college production. And with Stevenson, as you guys are familiar with the Oklahoma offensive scheme, so Stevenson has a lot of lanes, wide lanes to run through, and as a result, he looks like he's busting off all these long runs. But when I saw him in the team drills and in tighter quarters, I thought it stood out to me that his feet just weren't nearly as quick as the other running backs on his team or the other team. So this is a guy who he appears to have like pretty good build-up speed for a player who they listed him at 247. He came in at 227. Well, if he's 247 and he runs a 4.65, that's one thing. If he's 227, then it's pretty average speed to below average. So I didn't see a guy who's going to generate a lot of his own, generate a lot of his own yardage. And I think he's not good, but there were people putting him in the top five running backs in this class, and I don't think he's in the top 10 of running backs in this class. It's a player who came up in discussion with someone else about Stevenson was Dante Foreman, the player who came out of Texas a few years back. And, you know, it's hard to judge him because he struggled with injuries, but I kind of felt a similar way about Foreman as a prospect as I do about Stevenson. And then Surratt, he's a bigger body receiver, so he might end up making me look stupid for this opinion because we saw a lot of those guys come out and play well as rookies. You know, I thought, for example, Chase Claypool, I didn't think had a good Senior Bowl week last week, but he was so explosive at the combine, and then he had a great rookie season. I liked Claypool a lot more than I liked Surratt, though, because I don't think Surratt has that explosiveness that's going to show up later. The only way he was getting open in one-on-ones was pushing off, and they were calling it on him too. It wasn't like they were letting him get away with it. They were calling him on it. So it was that obvious because they really let the guys play in these drills, but he would just shove a guy. And I thought he's the only one having consistent trouble getting open one-on-one on all these reps. I was kind of out on him. And I don't think he's a player I would let other people take their chances on with.
And Jess, a guy you'd be familiar with that, you know, struggled a little bit was Frank Darby.
Yup. Oh, I was so sad to see him drop those passes.
Yeah, he had two drops in the game, one catch. I mean, people that are ASU fans that listen to this know who Darby is and what he is as a player. But the reality is he was, you know, he just did not provide that big play opportunity that you come to expect. He really looked more like an undrafted free agent this week than he did a guy that you have to draft or that you'd want to, you know, take and make sure you got him into camp.
And it was, which is disappointing. If you look at the kind of the program, Arizona State, they had N'Keal Harry, Brandon Ayuk. Harry hasn't panned out quite yet, but Ayuk had a really solid rookie season. The receivers coming out of Arizona have been quite talented, and you thought with this year that Darby was going to be the guy to take over. He got hurt in the first game, and you know, it was really a rough year for him, and to see how that played out, the Senior Bowl was tough. So we're hoping with this pro day he can do more, or that he can flash in a camp somewhere if he doesn't get drafted.
And then I know Justin and I talked about this, but basically all the quarterbacks, not name Mac Jones, who didn't play in the game, who apparently had a good week, but man, I think the worst was Jamie Newman, but I wasn't overly impressed with really anybody. And that in and of itself makes all the other evaluations really tough as you go through, because you know, you're having to make a call on a wide receiver that's not getting the ball in a good spot after he runs a good route. You're having to make a call on DBs making play on the ball that maybe was just poorly thrown. You know, it was a tough week, I thought, in general for the quarterbacks, but the game, you know, itself was pretty bad.
You know, I thought Kellen Mond was all right. I thought he had a decent week of practice, and then they gave him the MVP of the game, and we've seen MVPs of the game go on and do well. I think they mentioned Daniel Jones was the MVP one year, was Josh Allen was the MVP one year, and going back a little ways, I think Dak Prescott was, and so was Russell Wilson, if I recall correctly. So it could be a good omen. You know, Kellen Mond's not going to go number 6 overall, but it could be a good omen for Kellen Mond that he had a good game. He was basically a three and a half year starter, I think, at A&M. So he has some of the most starts of any of the quarterbacks in the class. The other ones, yeah, it's, I think one team had Felipe Franks, Sam Ehlinger, and Ian Book were the quarterbacks. And I think a couple of those guys might have been Shrine Game guys in deeper years. So I didn't really see any. I mean, maybe not, because I know Jim Nagy likes to invite these guys that played a ton of games. So Ehlinger maybe along the same lines as like a Trace McSorley a couple of years ago, where you're like, what? Why are these guys, why do they want to see him at the Senior Bowl when it's pretty clear they don't look like NFL starters? But I guess you've got to fill the roster. I honestly have seen worse quarterback play. It's just that the best thing I can say is that a lot of times I didn't really notice it. So when you got in the game, you noticed it a little bit more, though.
And with that, let's wrap up this edition. Thanks so much, Justin, for your time on the show, talking draft, where it's more you and Seth talking than me giving my insights about the draft. But we appreciate the time. And we'll end this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, episode number 298. It'll be a couple of weeks as there's no combine to talk about and really nothing else going on, unless there's some big news that drops. We will probably be on hiatus for 2 or 3 weeks when we can start get gearing up for free agency. So with that, that's Seth Cox and guest host Justin Higdon. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.